Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Ben Klube, CEO of Energy Pathways, to discuss a pivotal moment in the UK's energy sector. Recently, Ben penned an open letter to the UK government addressing the growing uncertainty in the energy storage landscape. In his letter, he emphasised the need for common sense storage solutions to ensure the UK's transition to net zero remains on track. In this episode, we'll delve into the challenges facing energy storage development, the implications of current policies, and the path forward for sustainable energy infrastructure. Ben will share his insights on the Marram Energy Storage Hub MESH project and discuss how regulatory clarity can unlock investment and innovation in the sector. So welcome back to the podcast, Ben.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, obviously, in your open letter, you highlight how current policy uncertainties are deterring investment in the energy storage projects like MESH. Could you elaborate on the specific policy gaps or regulatory ambiguities that are causing investor hesitation?
Yeah, sure. For us, in our case, it is the issue of a gas storage license that gives confidence to the company and investors to proceed with what we think is a very important energy transition project for the UK. But for other projects, there are other government approvals that are no doubt important for projects to proceed. So it's really pace of government approvals that can contribute to accelerating the UK's energy transition and getting the right projects moving forward.
Okay, so Ben, what is the situation in terms of the UK consumer in all of this? Because they seem to be the one that's sort of in the middle of the crossfire of all of this. We've got probably the highest electricity bills, maybe even in the world. You know, we've got this, what some people are now calling, you know, net zero craziness, literally, that we're, and it seems to be that the only people who are paying for it are the consumers, because the wind farmers are still making good profit for sure. The gas providers are making good profit. Everybody's making good money from this situation, but the consumer is getting a not very good deal.
Yeah, that's right. So quite a large number of the projects associated with the UK's energy transition are on the back of government financial support or subsidy structures that, and the cost of those get transferred back to the consumer, largely through their energy bills. So by example, wind developments are supported by what's called a contracts for difference. And under those arrangements, the wind developer gets paid a fixed income for providing intermittent wind energy, and the costs of those are essentially passed back and paid for by the consumer. You know, so with that and those various projects that are supporting the energy transition, those costs get passed to the consumer, and that's why you're seeing increasing energy bills being paid by people in the UK.
So how will MESH reduce those energy bills for the consumer?
So the MESH project doesn't require a government support package in order for it to proceed, and so there is no sort of pass-through additional cost onto the consumer. And we think that is an attractive proposition, not just for the consumer, but for the government, in that it's not a draw on the public finances. So really, to deliver on net zero outcomes by a very tight timeframe, 2030, you know, the sooner we get the MESH moving, the benefits that can then be passed through into consumers' energy bills.
And how will that actually physically happen then? At the minute, we produce enough wind. If the wind blows, all good. But we're actually putting more wind into production by the looks of things. So if the wind blows in the future, you're going to have excess energy produced. So what's going to happen to that energy? Because the consumer is still paying for that energy, I presume, even though it's not going to be used.
Yeah. So in the situation with wind, what the UK's plan is here is to increase the current wind capacity of the UK, which is approximately around about 30 gigawatts, and to increase it threefold by 2030. I mean, that's the target. And so you're looking at potentially somewhere up in the order of 90 gigawatts. Now, current UK demand levels for electricity are in the order of 30 gigawatts. So let's say it doesn't take much to work out that there's going to be a considerable amount of excess wind being generated. And one of the tools in the toolbox of managing the grid is when there's excess wind, the operator of the grid essentially tells the wind farm not to produce, but they still get paid in that situation. Now, currently, the cost in 2024, the cost of those what are called curtailments was in the order of £1 billion, and that £1 billion gets passed on to consumers into consumer electricity bills. The government's forecast of the cost of curtailments is going to increase to in the order of £6 billion by 2030. And so again, the consumers are paying for energy that they don't benefit from. And that number is obviously escalating rapidly. And so storage solutions are a means of harnessing some of that wasted wind energy and for the benefit of the consumer. So it can be used at a time when there's no wind and demand requires it.
I mean, that's just batshit bonkers. It's completely nuts, isn't it? It's like, what? Brain blown. Absolutely incredible. So what do the UK government have to do? And not just maybe mesh, but mesh is the main thing we're talking about. What do they have to do? Do they just have to push the quangos or the bureaucrats just to get their finger out and actually sign an agreement so that you guys can actually do what you said you're going to do?
I mean, that's right. The UK government, clearly recognises that storage is an essential part of the energy transition mix in order to get to meet its net zero goals and its 2030 clean power ambitions. And so we need energy storage projects to proceed in a timely fashion so these accelerated targets can be met. So in our case, that's simply the approval of a gas storage license to get the project moving forward. But whatever those approvals are in the UK government landscape, the sooner storage projects are approved and advanced, the sooner we can bring value to the consumer.
And the reality of this situation is that if they don't do it, then the consumer's gonna stock the bill. And if they do it, then the reality is the consumer won't have to pay quite as much by the looks of things. But the reality also is, just so people understand, and I'm only really coming to understand this, that renewables are great, okay? But the way the grids are set up, and this happened in Spain as well, the way the grids are set up, this isn't going to be 100% renewables. We're going to have gas peaking stations. We're going to have gas powered stations because of the way the grid works. We need that push of electricity, which doesn't come from the renewables. So what's your thoughts on that?
Well, that's exactly right, Kevin. So what we have is a grid dominated, going to be dominated by renewable energy in the UK's case, principally wind. And when the wind doesn't blow, it needs to be backed up, and that is with a power source that is dispatchable, i.e., it can be switched on when needed, which is something that wind doesn't offer. And currently, the way the UK grid operates is that dispatchable power is substantially supplied by gas-fired power generation. But it's increasingly getting squeezed out of the market, and that's going to also be at risk of disappearing. So solutions whereby you can store this excess wind and then bring it into the market in a dispatchable manner is really the an important thing that needs to be addressed in the energy landscape. And fully the UK government understands that, and that's what we're here to try and contribute to with our mesh project.
The thing is, do they understand it? Because the government publishes an open letter, and words are quite cheap, saying, among other things, they want net zero by 2030 and they want more energy storage. Obviously, you've published one back. But it seems to be the lack of joined up thinking, because really what you need is speed. You need the licenses approved quickly, and they seem to be incapable of doing it as quickly as needed. I mean, how fast would you hope for license approval to come along now?
Well, look, the signal that we had was early this year. That's clearly not happened. And we just encourage the awards and decisions to be made as soon as possible. And it's not in the consumer's interest and the country's net zero objectives interest to for decisions to take a long time. It's a very ambitious target that the country's facing, and we want to make sure that we can contribute to those goals, and equally our investors want to make sure that they can contribute too. So investors will find can often go off and find other opportunities, which we think would be a shame.
Yeah, so it'd be a huge shame, especially because it seems, and I know you can't say this with or not within an RNS, but it seems you have the funding in place already. People are ready to go with their own private capital. You're not asking for the government to contribute. And yet, if we talk about sort of like the broader picture, I believe the UK already has the lowest or potentially one of the lowest energy storages in Europe already. We have the North Sea picture where there's clearly not joined up thinking. But beyond that, I mean, if you see the power cuts in Spain and France over the recent months, like really serious power cuts, internet outages, or even a couple of years back when Russia invaded Ukraine and then you could no longer rely on that energy source anymore. It very much feels like the UK needs to have more energy storage. I don't think this is really a mesh question or an energy pathways question. This is a critical national importance. Would you agree?
I think my comment to that is it's the balance between three factors in an energy landscape. It is obviously low emissions, net zero outcomes. There is affordability of energy to the consumer, and that helps to drive economy and growth. And thirdly, energy security. And so and having a reliable supply of energy, for whatever the circumstance. Now, that energy independence is clearly a theme of the UK's government ambitions in its energy transition. And as you've pointed out, from a gas storage perspective, the UK has some of the lowest levels of gas storage capability in Europe and actually in the developed world. And as it's increasingly reliant on imports, we would suggest that gas storage has a significant role to play in the UK's energy independence going forward.
Just kind of briefly for people who are just tuning into the mesh story at the moment, like the plan is to store 50 billion cubic feet of natural gas and green hydrogen across sort of four offshore salt caverns, all powered by offshore wind. Can you compare that to the Rough storage facility owned by Centrica, which is, currently what we're relying on at the moment?
Yeah, so our planned gas storage facility within Mesh, as you've pointed out, is we're targeting a storage capacity in the order of 50 to 60 billion cubic feet of gas. That compares, it's comparable to the Rough gas storage facility's current capacity.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because it does feel like you have everything in place and you just need the government to award you the licenses and then away you go.
Yeah, and I think in the circumstance where Centrica has flagged, there is a, well, at least a possibility, there's a serious risk that the Rough gas storage facility may
It
close
closed down.
down, and that from an exposure from an energy independence point of view for the UK, were it to close down, that is somewhere in the order of two-thirds of the UK's gas storage capability. So what is already a very small gas storage capability will be significantly decreased. So, I would have thought optionality around additional gas storage capability for the UK is something that should be considered as attractive.
So
I
who
can't.
is the final decision maker here, Ben? Is it Ed Miliband? He's the guru in charge of the Labour government. So policies in this respect.
Look, I think everyone can see that the landscape on energy policy is very much debated thing at the moment, and that centres around DESNZ and Ed Miliband, the minister. So clearly, there's a lot to discuss, a lot to get to consider. I think from my point of view, just encouraging prompt decision making to enable projects to move forward.
Yeah. So this is a message to Ed Miliband from Kevin. Get your finger out, please, Ed. Sort it out, okay? Because otherwise, UK households are going to be paying a hell of a lot more money for their electric, and they're going to blame you. Okay, I've finished.
Yeah, he'll be on the phone now to Ben straight away, I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And he will. Well, this is the thing, right? Because I saw a quote at a BBC News article a few days ago. It's probably quite interesting for Mesh. So the government's just announced 300 million pounds of public investment into domestic offshore wind supply chains through, you know, the publicly owned GB Energy, which is Miliband's kind of baby, right? And yet, if you build all of this extra wind capacity, but you don't have anywhere to store the energy, as we just said, it feels like you're sitting on a lame duck. I mean, when Centrica was talking about, you know, closing Rough quite recently, the Scottish government immediately said that the UK needs about 10 times the capacity of Rough already.
That's right.
If you already need that 10 times capacity and then you're talking about building more wind power, then surely, you know, just approving MESH before you build more wind power makes a lot more sense than building the wind power and nowhere for it to be stored. That's just from common sense to me anyway. But, you know,
now, there's the thing, Charles. You're using that word common sense. That doesn't necessarily correlate, does it? This is the problem. It's not joined up. Just as you said, I mean, I understand this is a difficult situation going from, you know, fossil fuels to try and have a net zero situation. But it doesn't seem that they're connecting the dots in the right way. It just doesn't seem.
Well, I think it's the fact that we have this.
Even from the gas point of view.
Yeah.
Like, why are we importing huge amounts of LNG when actually there's gas in Marin that could be pumped out and, along with many others?
Well, it's the 78% windfall tax that, you know, from an overhang from when the energy prices went crazy, and then the refusal to drill or explore or exploit more of the North Sea. My perspective is, I mean, most people don't really realize this, but oil is quite dirty. Coal, especially lignite coal, is very dirty. Gas is relatively clean. You know, when you're talking about transition fuel, I think over the longer term, regardless of anything else, we'll run out of fossil fuels. So we will have to go to nuclear, to wind, to solar. That will have to happen. But in the meantime, the gas transition and gas storage is critical. I mean, nobody can argue against it. And the only arguments that you could use against it are emotional. They don't have any kind of fact behind them. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, and just sort of building on your point, so not just from an energy security and an energy affordability does it make sense, but also it is beneficial from a net zero perspective, because the carbon footprint associated with domestic gas, and in particular marine gas in our case, is a fraction of the most likely replacement fuel for domestic gas, which is LNG. Mm-hmm. And that's a factor of a carbon intensity 20 times greater. So, you know, in all regards, let's say the climate's a winner, and the energy consumer is a winner, and the national security is a winner.
Yeah.
I think that means it's a hat trick and you've won. Now all we need is somebody to sign the bloody piece of paper. But anyway, do you reckon they're going to sort it out, Charles, or do you think they're in another universe?
They'll sort it out. I mean, we have Ed Miliband's email, right? I think we just send him the podcast. Maybe we've laid it out pretty well. Maybe he'll listen to it. Who knows?
Yeah, if we get his email, we'll send him the podcast. No problem.
Get him on as a guest.
And tell him he's welcome to come on as a guest if you're speaking to him, Ben.
On that bombshell, we'll say Ben Klube, CEO of Energy Pathways. Thanks very much for appearing back on the podcast.
Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.